Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Merton, the Marx editor. Today's episode of the podcast is on domain names, and specifically the review of the UDRP. That's the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. And for listeners that don't know, the UDRP provides a legal framework for resolving disputes relating to the abusive registration and use of domain names in most generic top-level domains, or GTLDs. The UDRP was created by the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, and adopted by ICANN, which is the body responsible for many aspects of the operation of the internet, back in 1999. And in just over 25 years, it's handled more than 120,000 cases. As part of its review of rights protection mechanisms, or RPMs, ICANN is looking at the UDRP. And in this context, a project team formed by WIPO and the Internet Commerce Association, ICA, recently published their final report and recommendations on reforms to the UDRP. In this podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Brian Beckham, head of the Internet Dispute Resolution Section of the WIPO Arbitration and Mediation Centre, and Zach Muscovich, General Counsel of ICA, to tell us a little bit more about the report. Hello to Brian and Zach.
Pleased to be here. Thanks for having us, James.
Hi, James. Thanks for having us.
And we also have two members of the Marx Cyberspace team, which monitors issues relating to the UDRP. And they are Fabrice Berker, who is a trademark and design attorney with Placero IP in France, and is also a WIPO domain name panelist, and Claire Speed, a trademark attorney at the Reckitt Group in the UK, who's responsible for the company's global domain name portfolio. So welcome to both of you as well.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Hi, everyone.
So thank you all very much for joining us today. And Brian, perhaps we could start with you. Can you tell us what was the aim of the UDRP review and what was the process that led to the final report?
Right. So I think a lot of people will know that the UDRP was created by WIPO in 1999, which means that there's 25 years of history, 25 years of case law, 25 years of industry expectations. That goes both for brand owners and for registrants and their counsel. So there was a real recognition that in any review, which is being prompted by ICANN's GNSO Policy Council, so this is the policy-making body at ICANN, which establishes policies for rights protection mechanisms in the domain name system. There was a vote taken by that policy council to review the UDRP, and there was a recognition that there was a real need to proceed cautiously so as not to upset the balance that's been achieved over the past 25 years. There was also a recognition that the work that was done in an earlier phase of rights protection mechanism policy work could benefit from a little bit of help in terms of focusing the work charter. And so we obviously have a very big stake in this. ICA has a very big stake in this. And so we thought it made sense for us to come together and really harness the subject matter expertise that I think one of the core drivers from this was that a lot of the people, in fact, I think the majority of people that were involved in our review project were not regular participants in the ICANN world. These were people who are outside counsel, the brand owners themselves, registrants, the lead faculty for our training workshop that we host here in Geneva. And so we thought it was important to really hear from the people who live and breathe the UDRP every day, who might not participate in ICANN's policy processes, which do take quite a bit of time commitment. So we wanted to not leave any of that expertise on the table and really help to most usefully inform the ICANN policy process that is in front of us as best we could.
And how did that process work? Did you speak to this wide range of people that you mentioned and kind of get their input? Is that what happened?
Yeah, so the first order of business was really setting out to identify who to include in the group. And there's a lot of very competent people that could have been included, but we also understood that it was necessary to, you know, have a relatively limited size group so that we could get work done in relatively quick fashion. We were about 1 year from start to finish, which for anyone who follows ICANN policy processes, we'll understand is really a rapid clip. So we wanted to be as comprehensive as possible. We wanted to find people from all around the world representing different viewpoints, but also be nimble and keep moving. So what we did was we landed on a group of 15 experts, and then we had a series of invited experts where we canvassed different parts of the community. So there were phone calls with brand owners, phone calls with domain name registrants, phone calls with counsel and experts within the CCTLD world. And so we undertook a series of about a dozen calls over the course of last summer to further widen that group of expertise that contributed to the project. Then, of course, we knew that even with those two tiers, there were a lot of people that might have valuable inputs. And so we put out a draft report for public comment. We took all that on board and iterated that into a final report that we've now shared with ICANN.
Yeah, thank you very much. And so the final report, I think some people have seen, came out towards the end of last year, 2025, didn't it? So Zach, can you tell us what were the key recommendations in that final report, and you know, what were the key things that came out of it?
Sure. So there were 24 recommendations in total. A handful of recommendations were recommendations against opening up an issue, but most were recommendations that were in favor of a certain approach or a particular policy change or a particular direction. And, you know, just to relate this to the points that Brian made, is that aside from the recommendations themselves, the project and the report in and of itself is a proof of concept. It's proof of concept that there can be a more efficient, practical way forward for reviewing the UDRP, considering that, for example, the initial DNSO Council vote to begin a review happened in 2016. The phase one, which didn't get to the UDRP, commenced in 2020 and ended in 2024, and the recommendations are not yet completely implemented. So we recognize that there's a necessity to find a practical, efficient way forward, and we've presented it to ICANN in this fashion after wide consultations. In terms of some highlights of the particular recommendations, there's many, as I mentioned, there's 24, but to pick on a few that may be of particular interest to our audience, one is an appeals layer. The project team felt that although error decisions are very rare in the UDRP, an appeals layer could benefit the overall system by providing a means of avoiding court in the event of an error decision, and can also emphasize to panelists to stick with the consensus views rather than make rogue decisions. So that's one major proposal. Another one is what we are calling true cancellation. As many users and practitioners at UDRP will be aware, transfer is one of the remedies, but cancellation is the other remedy available in the UDRP. And cancellation means that if a trademark owner is successful in the proceeding, that they can have the domain name canceled, which sounds great. However, the name gets put back into circulation immediately and is open for somebody else to register. What we felt as a project team is that there's some merit in a new procedure that would allow what we're calling true cancellation, which is the name isn't recirculated back. It's taken off the shelf. It's unavailable for registration. That would enable brand owners to not have to maintain portfolios of domains they really don't want and have no intention of using, but have recovered through the UDRP process. There's still some things to work out about this proposal, such as, is there going to be any available means of bringing a domain name back from the shelf in the event of, for example, a good faith registrant or a good faith prospective registrant rather having an interest in it? A third one of our major proposals is an expedited procedure. UDRP itself is very fast and expedited, particularly compared to court. In many cases, a complainant will be able to to go through the entire UDRP procedure in 60 days, which is nothing short of miraculous compared to a court proceeding in most instances. And this has been around since 1999. The UDRP was an innovation in on online arbitration. We think, however, as a project team, that we could do even better in certain circumstances, that in the event that a case is brought against a particular kind of a domain name, and the example I typically use, and it's not limited to this, is mycitibanklogin.com. That may not need 60 days to sort through. That's the kind of domain name that when you see it, absent the most unusual of defenses, would be a no-brainer transfer. And so finding some way of enabling trademark owners who have perhaps well-known marks or are previously won UDRP cases in respect of the trademark, or some other criteria which should enable a trademark owner to proceed more expeditiously than even the expeditious UDRP.
Interesting. So there's three kind of key proposals there. And I know there's, as you said, there's quite a number of other proposals as well. Brian, there was also a sort of a number of areas that were identified where additional work is required, I think. Can you say a bit about some of those?
Yeah, so Zach's hit on a few of them. There was four tiers that we bucketed the recommendations into. The first was where there was agreement amongst the project team, and we actually came up with the proposed recommendation that we felt was pretty readily implementable. So that was sort of handing that over to ICANN's policy review team in a ready-to-go format, if you will. Those were mostly operational suggestions, so things like managing the protocols around supplemental filings, the suggestion for some education materials, some suggestions around how registrars work with the UDRP processes, how registrars can help with case notification, et cetera. And then the second tier was where some of the future work lies. And those were ones where I think it's important to recall that there was actually a wide agreement amongst the project team that they were topics that were worth exploring, and that they would benefit the UDRP. But to be frank, in the time that we had given ourselves, it wasn't possible to provide a specific recommendation. Zach mentioned appeals. That one, I think, has a lot of potential to benefit the UDRP system. One of the calls that I mentioned earlier was with the CCTLD Nominet, which manages the .UK space, and they've successfully deployed an appeals layer. And so we heard from their general counsel and the chair of their experts group on how that works in practice. And we think that has a lot of potential benefit for the UDRP system. Zach mentioned cancellation. I think that probably has the most, you know, practical impact for brand owners in terms of avoiding the cost involved in defensive registrations. There were a couple of other ones. Zach mentioned the expedited. That was, again, another one where the group agreed that this was something that ought to be explored. But when we started to get into the details of what that should look like, it was clear that we needed a little bit more time than we had given ourselves. But we were also mindful of the fact that we wanted to produce a report and give that over to ICANN and get it into the policy process over there. Two of the other ones that fell into that category were third-level domains. They don't come up terribly often, but there are a number of third-level situations where somebody might have registered, you know, example.com, and then they're selling third-level domains under that, and then brand owners are often left without an avenue for redress. So we thought that could be something that could be usefully incorporated into the ICANN contractual matrix. And then the age-old and/or question was one that came up, and that was one where I think somewhat surprisingly there was large agreement within the group, obviously with some need for safety valves around there, you know, making sure that registrants who held domain names for a very long time weren't unfairly put in jeopardy, but equally recognizing that it wasn't fair for brand owners to potentially face a situation where they are not aware of a change in registrant, but they're unable to address active infringement. Some of the other ones that were in the third and fourth category are much more complicated. So things like free speech and so on, and fell into those. And those were ones where the project team largely agreed that they were interesting topics, but there were such a diverse range of views that we didn't propose a specific solution. And we thought that would be something that would be more within the remit of maybe specialized work tracks within an ICANN policy process.
Great. Thank you very much. And so turning to you again, Zach, what happens next when it comes to UDRP reform? And what do you expect to be the next steps?
Sure, James. So our emphasis is not just on the particular proposals, but getting some kind of review underway in some efficient manner within our lifetimes. And so, really, what we've emphasized to stakeholders in the ICANN community is that there's a way forward that isn't going to ruin everyone's lives or a project that only our grandchildren will reap the benefits of. And so what we're trying to do is get the review underway, but there's a lot of competing priorities for the ICANN community in terms of other policy proposals. That's really the challenge ahead. The other part of the challenge is that remarkably, not everyone agrees with us that there should be a more efficient way forward. Some people believe that there should be a kitchen sink approach, that everything under the sun to do with UDRP needs to be examined, studied, more data gathered, statistics compiled, many more discussions, virtually ignoring the 25 years of experience that practitioners already have, and ignoring the agreement that has been reached on many of the issues that are solvable. And so the ICANN community and stakeholders and practitioners in particular, and MARC members, really need to put aside whatever differences they have in an overall effort to get a review underway in a practical form.
And this is a question that's going to be discussed over the next, several years, I guess. Is that realistic?
Well, let's hope not, James.
You think sooner?
Well, it wouldn't be unprecedented, if we put it that way. But our focus is on that not happening.
Good. Okay. Well, I know, obviously, MARC has been and will continue to be very much part of that discussion. And as I mentioned, the MARC cyberspace team in particular has been following these developments. So I want to turn now to Claire and Fabrice to get a bit of a perspective from you. So Claire, first of all, what is the MARC's response to the publication of the final report?
Yeah, actually, first as a starting point, you're right. Several MARC members were among the group of subject matter experts who took part in the review. And lots of the points that we were behind have been discussed already. We supported the change to or in the and/or test, so that bad faith relating to either the time of registration or subsequent use would satisfy the test. We think that would be clearer. It would close a loophole. It already works in many CCTLD dispute resolution processes. So it was really good to see the support for the work track on that change. We were also heavily in agreement with the reasonably priced appeals process, possibly a three-person panel. And again, we noted that they work well in the UK. We supported the idea of voluntary mediation as long as there were safeguards in place so that this couldn't be used as a delaying tactic by vexatious respondents. We had some points around the codification of jurisprudence, and it was good to see that that will be looked into further. And we supported the education and training for registrars on how to comply, make sure they're complying with the UDRP. The point that hasn't been discussed so far is the final recommendation was against the introduction of the loser pays model, but Marx's view was there should be this award of costs. We know that this would add a layer of complexity, and we don't want to, you know, we don't want to be discussing this in 10 years' time and drag it out, but it does work in other proceedings. And we just offered the EUIPO trademark process as a good example. We suggested a relatively low reimbursement figure, just $500. And it has to be said that is far lower than the EUIPO costs awards that cover the entire official fee plus cap costs of representation.
Yeah. And so the position with the UDRP at the moment is basically if you bring a complaint, you pick up the bill.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's no room for negotiation on that. That's the way it is.
Yeah. And it means there's no impetus for a registrant, a registrar to settle a what Zach describes as a no-brainer transfer at an early stage in the process. They can just delay, go through the process when the result is very clear.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. James, if I might just on that point about the loser pays thing, I think that Notwithstanding that the project team was skeptical of a loser pay system, it wasn't because they didn't believe in the merits of it necessarily. For example, I would love to see a loser pay system, not just so successful complainants are reimbursed to whatever degree is Claire suggested for their filing fees, perhaps something for legal costs. And likewise, successful respondents would get reimbursed if they're successful. It's not an issue with the principle of it. The principle, I think, is sound. The cost should follow the event. However, the practical issues were so complex. For example, how do you recover the money from someone who's not using their real who is information, or somebody in another country, or a respondent who has no money? And so it introduced possibilities of posting a bond, and that and then in turn introduced another layer of complexity: who would administer it, who would disperse it, etc. Nevertheless, the basic premise of a loser pay system is very attractive. It's just the complexities of introducing it which are so challenging.
And how it works in practice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that develops and how that discussion develops. But moving on to you, Fabrice, again, from the point of view of Marx, what other reforms to the UDRP would Marx like to see? We've mentioned the loser pays already. Are there other things as well?
The discussion on the loser pay system are very interesting because they illustrate the economic imbalance of the situation in which brand owners are. Today, it's very easy, cheap to register and use a domain name and use it to in an abusive way and to abound. And in the same time, of course, enforcing the rights take time, might cost lots of money. So in this context, we were considering a fast-track procedure. It has been evoked by Zach just before, but it would be a very interesting and of considerable assistance for brand owners, because in many situations, we are facing cases where the bad faith is blatant, there is no defense, and in practice, the UDRP is the sole solution to enforce the right, because going before the court is not an option when we see the location of the respondent. And of course, they are playing with the system and they are using ISPs which are located in exotic countries or which are not at all cooperative. So having a kind of expedite procedure would be very, very great. Then the system could maybe also be rebalanced with a solution exploring the kind of expansion of the UDRP procedure, or building new procedure on the model of the UDRP. 20 years ago, the domain names were the main vehicle for online infringement. Now, it has been discussed by Brian just before, we are facing with subdomains, usernames on platforms. We have not yet talked about Web3 domains. And we are facing a landscape which is considerably evolving. And often, brand owner can only count on the degree of cooperation of the ISP. And once again, often fraudsters use non-cooperative technical intermediaries. So exploring either an extension of the UDRP or building new procedures on the model of the UDRP would be very great for brand owners. And in fact, this would not only serve the interest of trademarks owners, but it would be in the benefit of the whole internet community, because at the end, the victims is the final consumer and the economy in general, not only brand owner.
Interesting. Okay. I just want to pick up on something you mentioned, actually, and ask Claire about the emerging challenges that companies are facing. Fabrice mentioned some of the new tools and technologies being used online, and I imagine artificial intelligence is obviously a big factor. What are some of the emerging challenges that you're seeing, Claire?
I actually think the infringements that we're seeing in the online space are more sophisticated than ever. AI is certainly assisting in creating the product images that are used on listings of counterfeits. It's also creating content on fake sites that is better quality. It looks better, it looks more official, and it draws users in to parting with their personal information or their money. What stands out to me is there's a real breadth of new issues: fake competitions, loyalty schemes, cyber security, cyber currency scams, investment scams, recruitment frauds. And I don't doubt that those sophisticated infringements are being facilitated by use of AI. It's quicker to get these sites up and running. It's quicker to move them around amongst intermediaries and platforms to invade our enforcement action. And the use of deepfakes is something we're very much watching
as the
emerging threat. As Fabrice said, the online infringement is now happening on so many channels, on Web3, subdomains, apps, usernames, and all the platforms that we have now. There are so many more ways for bad actors to reach users. And when we see a blatant misuse that's causing real harm, so it's phishing or consumers who are actually losing money, the priority is to get it taken down as quickly as possible. And if our only option is to deal with uncooperative intermediary who delays or refuses to act, then that's really frustrating. So I really like the idea of expanding the UDRP to deal with different types of infringement.
Yeah, well, maybe we can come back to that before we finish, just on whether that's realistic and likely to be possible. Before we do, Fabrice, I could just come back to you and ask you, what further actions or activities does the Marks team, the cyberspace team, plan in this area? Do you have any further sort of research or events that you're thinking about doing?
Yep. In fact, to address all the challenges evoked by Claire, we focus on three main pillars. First, intelligence gathering, awareness and member training, and also, of course, advocacy. Our first priority is to identify and to understand the new trends, the new threats on the internet. And for this, we are fortunate to count in our teams members of very broad and different backgrounds. That's very valuable to decipher new technologies and new infringement techniques. And of course, regarding the domain names and the UDRP review, we closely follow each ICANN meetings to stay ahead of the discussion. Then we strive to translate our findings into practical knowledge for our members. This often takes the way of organizing webinars. For instance, we have organized challenges with generative IA, and we are considering working on the webinars and the new JTLDs, new round for this year of ICANN program, to help our members to navigate in this evolving landscape. And we work also on practical guides intended to help our members to enforce their rights. For instance, we have worked with anti-counterfeiting teams on the practical guides to explaining how to report the online infringement to the different main platforms. And then finally, Marks is a strong advocate before the official bodies. And as soon as we have the possibilities, we comment projects on the new reform. And of course, we have commented the WIPO ICI report, and we will participate to this kind of initiative.
Yes, I know Mark also is active before ICANN, isn't it? Attending the ICANN meetings and making representations on behalf of brand owners there. So members, Mark's members should definitely look out for further information from the cyberspace team on the website, and no doubt at Mark's events, and as you mentioned, webinars and things soon. So thank you all very much. We've almost come to the end of our time. Just to wrap up, I want to ask each of our speakers just for one sort of prediction or speculation, at least, about what the future holds for the UDRP. And in the interest of time, it'll have to be just one each, and you have to keep it very brief, I'm afraid. Zach, maybe we could start with you. What do you think the future holds for the UDRP?
The UDRP will continue to be a reliable dispute mechanism for all stakeholders. There will be some improvements eventually, but there will be no harm done to the UDRP. It will only be improved.
That's a very optimistic note from you, Zach. Thank you very much. What about you, Brian? Are you similarly optimistic?
I'd like to echo what Zach said, but I would add, and I know you've asked for one, but maybe if I could just offer two observations. One is we've increasingly seen calls for using the UDRP. Claire mentioned this, Fabrice mentioned this, the UDRP as a model for dispute resolution in e-commerce platforms, in social media, in Web3. We're always in discussions with stakeholders on that. In terms of the UDRP, we're no surprise seeing an increase in the use of AI for pleadings, complaints, responses, website content. And so that obviously brings a lot of efficiencies, but it also opens up new avenues of attack and complications that we're just starting to wrestle with collectively.
Yeah, hallucinations and that kind of thing. Claire, what about you? What do you think the future holds?
I still see it as being very much at the heart of brand protection enforcement online. And I look forward to seeing any extensions or expansions of the model because it's a really useful tool for us.
Great, thank you. And finally, Fabrice, you get the last word.
I'd like to express a dream of probably any IP lawyer. It would be to see the UDRP or UDRP-like procedures applicable to any TLDs. This would be fantastic from a brand owner perspective.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's good to be ambitious, I think. Thanks very much to Brian, Zach, Claire, and Fabrice for joining us today and talking through some of these issues relating to the UDRP and the review. There's a couple of, or at least one blog on the Marks Class 46 blog, which summarizes the final report, and that includes a link to the full version as well, which is on the WIPO website. So do have a look at that if you want to find out more about all the recommendations. I think Zach, you said there were 24 recommendations in total, so lots to look at there. And as Fabrice said, I'm sure this is a topic that will come back prominently in future Marks events and publications and reports and so on. So if you're interested in this area, do look out for that. But for today, thank you very much indeed to all our speakers. Thank you very much to those of you joining us on this podcast. And we will have another episode of Talking Marks for you very soon. Thanks and goodbye.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.